Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a very special edition of Torah Studies. This is our Pesach class, the first of our two sessions on the holiday of Passover. We're calling it Pesach Boot Camp because we are getting ready for the holiday, and there's only one way to get ready for the holiday, and that is to study about it and to get into the spirit of the celebration. Okay, so tonight we talk about a very fascinating custom. We know that Passover is filled with customs. There are customs and traditions and obligations and biblical commandments associated with the holiday. And there's a lot to potentially, theoretically, there's so much to talk about, so much to explore. We're going to focus on one custom that is very controversial. And that is the custom that children have to steal the Afikoman. So there are 15 steps of the Seder. Kadesh, we make Kiddush. Urchatz, we wash our hands. Karpas, we dip a vegetable in salt water. Wait, Kadesh, Urchatz. Kadesh, Urchatz, Karpas, Yachatz. Yeah, I was right. Yachatz. I really need to brush up on this. We're a week away, right? Okay, Yachatz is number four. And Yachatz, so after we've made Kiddush, said the blessing over the wine or grape juice, and after we wash our hands, and after we dip the vegetable in the salt water, after that, what we do is we take, there are three matzahs, we take the middle matzah, we break it in half, and then we take the larger half, break it into five pieces, such as the Kabbalistic custom. And that afikoman, it's called the afikoman, that half of the matzah that's now broken up into five pieces is set aside for the end of the meal. Only to return after the whole Haggadah, after we tell the story, and after, what else? After we tell the story, and after we eat other matzah, and after we eat the mar, and after we eat the sandwich. Hey guys, welcome, welcome. After all of that, only then do we get back to eating? Oh, and then we have the meal. It's only after the meal that for dessert, we have the afikoman. And our tradition is that after the afikoman, we don't have any other food. That's the last food that we have. There are a few other cups of wine, but after that, we close at the Seder with a blessing after the meal and some songs of praise, verses of praise. And then we say, next year in Jerusalem, and we call it a night. But there's an interesting tradition associated with the afikoman, and that is, in some families, and tell me if you've seen this custom, or maybe you grew up with this custom, or maybe you have done this with your children, some have the custom that the kids take the afikoman and they actually hide it. They steal the afikoman and they hide it, and they only give it back.
They hold it for ransom.
And they'll withhold it until you promise to give them a present after the holiday. Has anybody experienced that tradition or grew up with that tradition? Tradition? No? Yes? Okay. We had that tradition. Huh? Oh.
If there was a rabbi there, you would hide it.
And the kids would look for it, or the kids would look for it. So some have the opposite custom. And when they found the guy, right? So there's two customs. One is the kids hide it, and they ransom it for a prize. The other one is the adults hide it, and if the kids find it, they get a prize. Different twists on it. But let's focus on the one that I mentioned, just because that raises... Well, I think both ways raise a question, but that way raises an even bigger question. And the question that we're going to address is, why are we teaching kids to steal? What's up with that? Yeah, it's all fun and games, but really? Is this really what we want the kids involved with on the night of Passover? It's like, all right, now you're going to hide it and not tell me where it is. And like, why is that a thing? Before we get to the question, let's establish the base. Well, let's explore the origins. Good to see you.
How you doing?
Let's explore. Thank God. Let's explore the origins of this traditions. All right. So let's begin. And please start with text number one. That's it. It's on page 232 in the book or in the booklet. It's right there. The first page or two. Sorry. Yeah. No. It's 232. Okay. Text one. This is a Talmudic text that some say has to do with this tradition of the children and the adults and the stealing of the afikoman. Take it away.
Rabbi Eliezer says, we grab matzahs on the nights of Passover in order that the children should not fall asleep. It was taught. It was related of Rabbi Akiva that never did he say in the Beit HaMidrash, it is time to rise, see, study, except on the eve of Passover and the eve of the Day of Atonement. On the eve of Passover, because of the children, so that they might not fall asleep on the eve of the Day of Atonement in order that they should give food to their children.
So a few things here. Let's unpack this Talmudic passage. Number one, Rabbi Eliezer says, and this is enigmatic, and it's a little bit not explained, which is why we have just in this booklet about three or four different interpretations of what this means. So he says, Chotfin matzot belele psachim. On the night of Passover, the nights of Passover, the two nights of the first two nights of Passover, when we have the Seder, Chotfin matzot, we grab matzos. What? Who grabs? Who are we grabbing from? What's going on here? Why are we grabbing? What? So he says, why is it that the children so that the children should not fall asleep? What does grabbing matzahs have to do with the kids? Okay, so it's very unclear, which is why we need the commentaries in the next few pages, which we'll get to in a moment. Let's quickly though discuss the second paragraph. So Rabbi Kiva, he never said in the house of Torah study, he never said, folks, let's call it a day, time to go home. He never called it. When people left, they left, but he never officially announced that the time for study is over. In fact, when I was in camp, in overnight camp and other camps, so there was a PA system, as camps have, overnight camps certainly have, and when we would always have in the morning, you know, there would be, so in overnight Jewish, at least Chabad overnight camps, my experience. So there's in the morning, there's Cocoa Club, which is you get cocoa and you study some Mishnayot by heart, and then you go into davening, and then you have breakfast, and then you have learning classes, and only after all that do you have sports and swimming and all that's the campy stuff. So you have like a few hours in the morning of, you know, prayer and study. So the way they used to announce the end of Torah, the end of learning classes is they would say, learning never ends, learning never ends. That was the announcement. So it's we're calling it by saying it doesn't end, but that was the euphemism for it's over now, we can play baseball. But the phrase was learning never ends. So Rabbi Kiva would never call the learning as ending. He would never say, folks, time to go, except the eve of Passover and the eve of Yom Kippur. Why? Pesach, to get the Seder started earlier so that the kids don't fall asleep, and the eve of Yom Kippur to feed the kids before the fast begins. Okay, it's all about the kids. Rashi explains, text 2a, what does it mean, chotvin matzot, we grab the matzahs. Dan, please read text 2a.
We raise the Seder plate so that the children will inquire. Others explain, quote, grab the matzah to mean that we eat it quickly. This is the more probable explanation, judging from the fact that the anecdote with Rabbi Akiva is associated.
So Rashi has two interpretations of what it means to grab the matzahs. One means that you take the Seder plate with the matzahs and you actually take it off the table, or you lift it up. Different customs, different traditions. At a certain point early on in the Seder, so you're all sitting down and you have the food in front of you and you're doing weird things. Like start off with the Kiddush. That's a normal Friday night activity, let's say, or it's a normal holiday activity. But then you wash your hands, and instead of eating the bread, which you don't have bread anyway, but instead of eating something of hamotzi status, instead of that, you dip a vegetable in, you don't say a blessing, and you dip a vegetable rather in salt water, and then you break matzah, but at a certain point, you're also taking away the matzahs and the Seder plate from the table, and then you bring it back. So all of this causes confusion. So Rashi says the first explanation of grabbing matzahs is that you're moving around the Seder plate so that the children will ask what's going on. And this is, of course, a major theme. A lot of the traditions that we do at the Seder are so that the children get involved and they become curious and they ask the question. It's, if you've ever wanted to see a model lesson of experiential learning, where you get the participants involved in the learning, and it's tactile, and it's hands-on, and it's multisensory, all the new age pedagogical terms of how to educate, just go to a Seder. It's got everything. It's interactive, it's hands-on experiential, it's multisensory. You're tasting the original food that they ate 3,000 years ago. I mean, it's unbelievable. Think about the pedagogical implications of a Seder. So that's Rashi's first interpretation. So you have to get the kids involved. By the way, quick aside, which is not an aside, it's really a fundamental point to all of this. And that is, it's not just that we want the kids involved because it's nice to have kids involved. The whole point of the Seder and the Haggadah, the Torah, the word Haggadah, that's the book that we use, right? The Haggadah. So where does that book come from? Where does that word come from? V'higadata levincha, you shall tell your children. The Torah says, right by the Exodus, that there will come a day, or the next generation, tell your kids, teach your children what happened. This should be, tell this story. Don't keep this story and let it die. Tell the story each and every year to your children. V'higadata, relate, tell the story. Levincha, to your children. So the Seder has to involve the kids, or else we're not doing it right. And if there are no kids there, then it's the inner child. But it has to be interactive and evoke curiosity. So that's Rashi's first point. His second point is that we eat it quickly. We grab the matzah. We eat it quickly so that the kids stay awake and are able to partake of the Seder. In other words, don't drag it out till 2 a.m. because your kids are going to fall asleep and they're not going to end up eating matzah. So chotfin es ha-matzos, grab the matzahs, eat it quickly so that the kids will be involved. Make sense so far? Okay, still not related to the stealing of the afikoman. Text 2b, Ramba, Maimonides. Let's keep it going. Stanley, please read this one, 233.
He should make changes on this night so that the children will see and will be motivated to ask, why is this night different from all other nights? Until he replies to them, this and this occurred, this and this took place.
Continue. One more paragraph.
What changes should be made? He should give to them roasted seeds and nuts. The table should be taken away before they eat. Matzah should be snatched from each other and the like.
So Maimonides there, the second to last point, well, before and the like, is his last specific idea of how to, what kind of strange things to do at the Seder to get your kids involved. He says matzahs should be snatched from each other, which is the literal meaning of what the Talmud says. We grab matzahs on the night of Passover. Maimonides, Rambam, in his discussion of the laws of chametz and matzah, so he says we are literally taking matzahs from each other. I don't know what that looks like. That might be an interesting Seder. It's like, oh, hey, you got matzah, I got your matzah. I don't have matzah, I got your matzah. It becomes a whole, you know, food fight, matzah situation, ultimate frisbee matzah. I don't know what that looks like, but that's what he says should happen, again, to engage the children, which is not just a good thing, but it's an essential thing for the Seder experience. Let's keep it moving to text 2C. Is there another commentary? Marnie, please read this one, 234. This is the Rashbam.
We remove the matzah from the hand of the children so that they should not fall asleep due to the abundance of food and thus not be able to ask further. Now the food is taken from their hands. They will not fall asleep, and they will be awake to ask questions later.
Rashbam has a completely different interpretation. Rashbam says, you know what it means, grab the matzahs? Take the food away from your kids. And although that sounds cruel, why are we taking the food away from the kids? He says, because when children eat a full meal, they get drowsy, and they're going to fall asleep, and they won't make it through the Seder. So keep their intake of food minimal. Keep it minimized, right? Rashbam is saying, what does the Talmud mean when it says grab? You see how the Talmud says grab matzahs. So many different explanations. Rashi has two explanations. Maimonides has an explanation. And the Rashbam now has an explanation of what that means. It's a very enigmatic statement of the Talmud, and therefore the commentaries, each of them looks at it with a little bit of a different perspective. And again, the Rashbam's this last one to see on 234. He's saying, take the food away. Don't let your kids eat too soon, too much too soon. Then they'll fall asleep. Kind of stretch them out so that they can sit through the Seder. Good. Now, text 3a. Finally, we get to someone in the 1600s who connects this Talmudic passage of grabbing matzahs with the tradition that we started off the class with of stealing the afikoman, the children stealing the afikoman. Text 3a. Lolly, please read 235.
Maimonides writes, matzahs should be snatched from each other and the like. It's possible that the custom in these parts that the children snatch the afikoman evolved from this. This is done so that the children will stay awake and ask the questions. See Rashbam there.
Okay, so the Chok Yaakov, he was Rabbi Yaakov Reischer, so he says that what does it mean that we snatch matzahs from each other? What is that? So Maimonides says, based on the Talmud, he says, what does this mean? Perhaps it means, kind of like our custom, the way it's evolved, that the children snatch the afikoman. And what's the objective? The Talmud says, why do we grab matzahs on the night of Passover? In order that the children should not fall asleep. So if they steal the afikoman, remember, kadesh, urchatz, karpas, yachatz. You said kiddush, you washed your hands, you dipped the vegetable in salt water, and now you broke the matzah. When you broke the matzah, the larger half went away for the afikoman, and now the kids stole the afikoman. They took it, they hid it, and now they're giggling. Why are they giggling? Because they hid it, and you don't know where it is, and they're going to get a prize because they're ransoming it. It's a whole thing. So they're going to stay up for the Seder. Boom. So text 3a, Rabbi Yaakov Reischer says, maybe the custom, the tradition in Jewish homes, especially Ashkenazic homes, you know, in Germanic homes and other countries around there, this custom that's centuries old of children stealing the afikoman actually has, some say, a Talmudic, not a clear Talmudic source, but some say perhaps that is the source based on that Talmudic statement. Text 3b, Rabbi Yaakov Emden says a similar thing. Debbie, please read this one, 235.
There's a custom in Ashkenazi communities for the children to snatch the afikoman. This custom can be traced to the Talmud, which states, "You grab matzahs on the nights of Passover."
Okay, so again, he draws the same lines. He also lived in the 1600s and the 1700s. So it seems like this custom had been going on for a little while, and these rabbis were trying to find the origin of the custom, and they're tracing it back to this Talmudic passage, which could be interpreted many different ways, but they're saying, hey, maybe it's this custom that we can kind of connect. Now we begin with our questions, and now we begin the journey to exploring this on a much, much, much deeper level. The question is, I alluded to this question, or I stated the question all the way at the beginning of the class, but I'll state it here again. Many have a problem with this. Many have a problem with this custom. What are we teaching our children? What's the chinuch? What's the education? It's pedagogy, right? It's a night of education, right? What's the education? Steal things from your parents. Hide things from your parents. We understand that it's a game, right? Okay, but is this really the best thing that we want to teach our kids? It's a game. Why are we using why are we playing such a game? It sounds like trying to take away the fun out of Passover. I'm not. I am. Right? There are other ways to do this where it's not like borderline theft. Right? What's really going on here? In fact, text 4, text 5, we have other rabbis that are vehemently opposed to this custom, and they say that although this is a custom, you should not do this custom because it is teaching the kids the wrong thing on the night of Passover. Before we get there, there's a very cute explanation that some cite. It says in the Torah that at the night of the Exodus, the 10th plague was going on, right? So the 10th and final plague of the 10th plagues was death of the firstborn. We've all seen the movie, right? 10 Commandments. So they have that green haze that flows through the streets. Remember that? There's like a... I don't know if you made that noise. I'm making that noise. It was good, right? That's my spooky noise. It's amazing. It also works for ghosts and goblins and many different things. Right. Don't worry, you're safe. This is a safe zone. So the green haze is floating through the streets and everything, and all the firstborn Egyptians are being killed, are being slain, except for in Goshen, where the Jews live. They had put the blood of the Paschal offering on the doorpost, etc. The Torah tells us that at that night, as this plague of the death of the firstborn was raging, that the dogs did not bark. You familiar with this? The Torah says, no, the dogs didn't bark. It was like a miracle. Otherwise, when so much screaming and chaos is happening and loss of life, the dogs would typically bark, and it would be chaotic, frightening for the Jews. So this way, it was like a special miracle. It was frightening for the Jews. Now, so again, that night, no dogs were barking. The dogs were silent. The Talmud. So put that aside for a half a second. The Talmud says that a person should not live in a city where there are no dogs. Listen to this. Talmud says, don't live in a city if there are no dogs. Why? Because then you're going to be burglarized. You need to live in a place where there are dogs. Dogs that will bark when nefarious activity is happening. Otherwise, you're going to be victimized. It's not a good idea to live in a city without dogs. So now, let's connect the two pieces. So what happened the night of the Exodus? What happened? There are no dogs. The dogs were quiet. What do you think happened in the Jewish quarter based on this teaching of the Talmud? There's probably a Jewish ganav going around stealing from the homes. You with me? Right, the Talmud says don't live in a city without dogs barking because then theft is gonna happen. But that night of the Exodus, there was a miracle. The dogs didn't bark. So what do you think happened? There were Jews, probably, possibly, some say, in sort of a joking way, there were Jews stealing to commemorate the theft on the night of Passover, some say. That's why we have the children steal the Afikoman. That's the tongue-in-cheek explanation. Are you with me on this?
Were they stealing or stealing away?
Who was stealing away?
The Jews were stealing away.
Well, they were also stealing away. But again, this is kind of a tongue-in-cheek interpretation of the source of the custom of the kids to steal the Afikoman. Just like the night of the Exodus, there were probably people stealing because there weren't dogs barking. So we teach our children to steal. But again, there's fierce opposition to this. Let's read this inside. Text number 4, Alex. I think we're up to you. 236.
The custom in which the children snatch the Afikoman betrays the love of the mitzvah. Nevertheless, there are grounds to protest about this custom.
So he starts out by saying, look, we get it, we love it, the Afikoman, we want to get the kids involved. It's a great, theoretically it's coming from a good place, but practically speaking, we should annul this custom. We should not be doing this. Why not? Text number 5, here's another commentary, another rabbi who explains the problem here.
The custom for children to snatch the Afikoman is frivolous and baseless. Heaven spare us should the Gentiles hear that the Jews teach their children thievery to commemorate the Exodus from Egypt. One who refrains is deserving of praise.
Yeah, so he basically says, is this really what... Number one, is this really what we want to teach our kids? And is this really what we want others to associate with our celebration of Passover? It's like, oh, the Jews are celebrating their birth as a nation. They're celebrating their, right, because the Exodus was the birth of the Jewish people as a free nation. So, tradition of thievery, ever since. Is this, we know the stereotype of Jews already, right? We know the stereotype that Jews are looking to, you know, to accumulate wealth and whatnot. Is this really what we're setting ourselves up for anti-Semitism? We're literally... Anybody who's been, who knows, who heard about a Seder, and the kids are, we teach our kids to steal, is like, oh yeah, they started them off young. They really started them off young at the Seder. After like the biggest event of the year, the biggest family event of the year. It's holiday services, but the biggest family gathering of the year, Passover. And what happens? What are the kids, how are the kids indoctrinated in this ritual? What do they do? What's their role? They steal. Oh, yeah. Very, very Jewish of them. Like, so Rabbi Nachman Kahana, the Aruch HaChaim, who also wrote a book called the Ma'arei, he is vehemently opposed for this, toward this. He says, heaven spare us should Gentiles hear that the Jews teach their children thievery. To commemorate the Exodus. He also says another point, I think. I saw this somewhere. Where did I see this? Okay, you know that when the Jews left Egypt, they took a lot of Egyptian wealth, right? And you also may know that in Talmudic times, there were Egyptians that came to the Jews, or at least the Talmud relates the story that at a certain point in time, Egyptians came to the Jews and said, we want our money back. Do you know this? Egyptians wanted, what do they call it, reparations, whatever it is. Is that the right word? Is that the right term?
Yeah.
Okay, they wanted money. They said, you stole our money. We were defenseless. You know, we were being plagued. We were busy. And y'all left. Okay, that's fine. But then you raided us. You took all of our gold and silver, and it's in your Bible. It's not like, huh?
No, sorry. I mean, I was just jumping to something.
So then the rabbi said to them,
they have to be there as slaves in order to...
Well, no. The rabbi said, if we owe you money, you owe us money for all the... For all the slave labor that we did. Yeah. Maybe that's what we were going to say. Yeah. Right. So and then they dropped the case. But this was an actual thing that a group of Egyptians from Egypt came and said, we want our money. And the Jews said, okay, but to complete it. But the point is, the night of the Exodus, when we did take Egyptian wealth, are we teaching our children to steal? Is that really what's going on? Is that the legacy? Is that the message that we're leaving with our children? So some say it's a cute custom and it's coming theoretically from a good place in our hearts, but we really should be doing something else. Text number 6, here is from the writings of the Rebbe in his commentary on the Haggadah. This is what he writes about this custom to steal the Afikoman.
Oh, text number 6.
Yes.
The custom in some communities is that the children snatch the afikoman, which is thereafter redeemed for a gift, claiming that it is founded in the words of the Talmud. We grab matzahs on the night of Passover so that the children should not fall asleep. The previous Rebbe related that one time, as a little girl, the Rebbe Maharash's eldest daughter snatched the afikoman from her father. It seems that this was the exception, as the custom of snatching the afikoman was not practiced in the Rebbe's home.
So here we have the Rebbe writes that in the Chabad Rebbe's homes, their kids typically did not steal the afikoman. It wasn't a custom, with the exception of one time, one year, the Rebbe Maharash, his name was Rav Shmuel, the acronym Mareinu Harav Rav Shmuel, so Maharash. So he was the fourth Chabad Rebbe. His daughter, his eldest daughter, Devorah Leah, he had two daughters, Devorah Leah and Chaimushka, so his eldest daughter, Devorah Leah, snatched the afikoman, but that was the exception, it wasn't the rule. So that's just an aside as what happened in, not necessarily Chabad homes, but in the Chabad Rebbe's homes. Okay, we're still left with the question, why are we teaching our kids to steal? Is this a good custom? Is it not a good custom? Etc. Here's the interesting twist. What I'm about to present is the idea that Passover is connected with theft and deception wherever you look. In other words, I'm about to bolster the question. The question is, why are we teaching deception and thievery and, you know, snatching things on the night of Passover? To augment the question, I'm now going to point out that there are other instances of deception and thievery that are associated with Passover, beginning with the Moses-Pharaoh dialogue. I want you to open up the Chumash to page, let's see if I remember the number. It's 300 and either 67 or 76. Let's see if I got that right. I probably didn't, for the record, but let's see. Nah, not at all. Oh, actually, I was right. 367. I had two options. One of them was right. 367. This is shortly after God prevails upon Moses to accept the task of being God's spokesman and being the one to, being the official leader of the Jewish people. So Moses agrees to the mission, and then God tells Moses what to tell Pharaoh. So Anne, please read this. This is after Moses accepted the mission and God tells him what to say. This is the first time that Moses and Aaron, the two brothers, the first time they actually stand before Pharaoh and plead their case. So please begin right in the middle of the page where it says the number 5, chapter 5 of the book of Exodus, verse number 1, where it says afterwards.
Afterwards, Moshe and Aaron came and said to Pharaoh, "This is what God, the God of Israel, said. Send out my nation and let them sacrifice to me in the desert." Pharaoh said, "Who is God that I should listen to his voice and let Israel out? I do not know of God, nor will I let Israel out." They said, "The God of the heavens has come upon us. Now let us go on a 3-day journey into the desert, and we will sacrifice to God, our God. Otherwise, he may strike us," that is a polite way of saying you, "with a plague or with a sword." The king of Egypt said to them, "Why, Moshe and Aaron, do you disturb the people from their work? Go and deal with your own burdens." Pharaoh said, "The people of the land are now numerous, and you are suggesting that they rest from their work?"
Okay, so let's stop here. This is the dialogue. Moses and Aaron say, "Let my people go." And Pharaoh says, "No, there's too much work to do." Right? We're building all these things. We're not stopping construction now, and that's it. Now, if you look closely at Moses' request, what does he ask of Pharaoh? What is he asking of Pharaoh?
It doesn't say it here, but maybe I'm missing it. But didn't he originally say he wanted to go out and celebrate a holiday for 3 days?
That's what he said. It's right here. So text 3, verse 3 of chapter 5. They said, "The God of the Hebrews has come upon us. Now, let us go on a 3-day journey into the desert, and we will sacrifice to God, our God." So what Moses is requesting is permission to go for 3 days into the wilderness and to offer offerings and sacrifices to God. That is what Moses requests. And every time Moses repeats the request, either it's specified as the 3-day journey, or it's specified as going out into the wilderness to sacrifice and to bring offerings to God. To the point that at one point Pharaoh says, okay, you can go, but how far are you going to go out into the wilderness? And Moses is like, well, I don't know, I'm undetermined. And then it's a whole back and forth. Well, what are you going to take? Are you going to take the men or also the women and the children? Are you going to take all the animals or some of the animals? It's like, and Pharaoh's like, well, then no, because Moses is pushing for more and he wants less. Whatever it is. But what's clear here is that Moses did not ask Pharaoh for complete and total liberation. Do you see that? He doesn't say, this is what God asked me to tell you. Let my people go. You're in violation of our human rights. Right? And you're in violation of our civil rights. And therefore, I demand that you let my people go to be free. That's not what he says. He says, God wants us. There's a holiday. There's a celebration. 3 days. Offerings. Whatever. Fast forward, let's stay in the Chumash now. Fast forward to the 10th plague, where Pharaoh finally says, okay, go. You can find this on page 415. Page 415, toward the bottom, second half of the page. Verse 31. Dan, please read this one. You see that verse, second to last paragraph from 415?
He called personally for Moshe and Aaron at night, and he said, get up and go out from among my people, both you and the children of Israel. Go and worship God as you said. Take also your flocks and your cattle as you said, and go. Bless me too, that I should not die, as I am a firstborn.
So this is Pharaoh who goes around the night of the plague, the night of the 10th plague, and he's beseeching Moshe and Aaron. He says, go, you and the children of Israel, go, you and your people, go and worship God, as you said, take the flocks. Look at the words that he says. Go and worship God as you said. And in the Hebrew, he says, Ivdu es Hashem kedaberchem. Go serve God as you spoke, as you requested. What does he mean? What is Pharaoh saying?
He's talking about the 3 days.
3 days. He thinks it's going to be like a Burning Man or a burning animal thing, celebration, festival. It's whatever. Burning goat. Burning goat, right? Listen, we love goats, but you know. Okay, so Pharaoh says, I'm letting you go per your request. What you asked for, I'm letting. And what did he ask for? 3 days. This gives us a completely different picture. And what happens in the following part of the narrative, which is the beginning of the next Torah portion.
I understand also, so the next sentence says, take also your flocks and your cattle, as you said.
As you said.
Well, yeah, but why don't you take your flocks and your cattle?
To sacrifice them.
Flocks and cattle?
Flocks and cattle.
Seems like a lot
of... Flocks and cattle.
Flocks and cattle.
I get it, flocks and cattle, but it's...
Flocks and cattle. Da-dum-ba-dum.
Yeah, okay,
yeah.
Great.
Thanks. Yeah. Flocks and cattle.
It seems like a lot of stuff.
Well, that's what they. That was one of. That was one of the. Oh. So no. This is very important. In the. In one of the previous. After one of the previous plagues, Pharaoh's like, okay, I'm gonna let you go. But what are you taking? And Moses is like, we're taking the animals. He's like, take some of the animals. Moses is like, we're taking all the animals because we don't know what God is gonna specify for the offering. So we need all the animals because who's to say what God wants us to offer? So we need the variety, and then God will tell us what to offer, and then the rest we'll bring back.
And we also can't decide what outfits we need, so we're going to take all our stuff.
Right, and all your stuff.
It seems like, right. It seems like a strange thing.
I get it, but the commentaries point out, Pharaoh says a few times, as you requested, as you said, which indicates that Pharaoh was under the impression that they were
going
to come back.
He'll
which
go
is
the deal that they asked for.
Yeah, I mean, that was the deal that they had been discussing the whole time. And he's like, okay, fine, I'll let you go as you requested. Not like more than you requested. So now we understand what happens next. What happens next is that Pharaoh, one day he decides he's going to chase the Jews and pin them against the sea, and then the sea splits, right? Why did he chase the Jews? And when did he start chasing the Jews? You know what the answer is? After 3 days. After 3 days, what happened was, hold on, look, 425 in the Chumash. 4:20. This is like, this is, I would say this is a very classic way of understanding the narrative, but it's, I think somehow it flies over the radar, under the radar. Like, many people don't, this, I think this detail is not pointed out as often, perhaps, as it should. Stanley, please read this, middle of 4:25, verse number 5, right in the middle where it says, on the fourth day, in the parentheses.
On the fourth day, it was reported to the king of Egypt that the people had fled.
That's all you need to know. On the fourth day? What fourth day? And why fourth day? You know why? Because they were supposed to come back after 3 days.
They had a three-day weekend.
They had a three-day weekend, and now it's day four, and there's no sign of them returning. And so now it was reported to the king of Egypt that the people had fled. What do you mean had fled? He sent them out for 3 days. But now on day four, it's reported that they what?
Flee.
They fled. In other words?
Flee,
fled. No. I wasn't commenting on the fleet or the fled. Yeah. But I was, what does it mean they fled? Ki barachan, they fled. He sent them out for 3 days. After 3 days, now it's a jailbreak.
They were involved.
Now it's a jailbreak, yes.
But is the, on the fourth day, where is it in Hebrew?
No. It's not there.
It's not there.
It's not there. It's commentary saying.
It's commentary.
Why do the commentary say that? Yeah. Because why does Pharaoh say that they fled? They didn't flee.
They didn't return. They said they would.
That's it. So that's why Rashi says, when did this happen? Okay. After 3 days. Because otherwise, if it's within 3 days, then they didn't flee. They were sent out. But after 3 days, now you can say they fled. And now he says, now they're coming. I'm going to bring them back. And then the whole splitting of the sea happens. And, you know, we know what the, that was the end of that. But here's the question. The question that's asked by many people, including the Kabbalists and the mystics, is the night of the 10th plague, when the Jews clearly had the upper hand, and at that point it seems probable that Pharaoh would have agreed to anything, why didn't Moses tell Pharaoh, by the way, FYI, I know we originally asked for 3 days, but at this point, I don't think we're going to come back at all. We're going. Why wasn't he upfront with him? Why did he deceive him on the night of the Exodus? Why the deception? The same night that our kids are stealing our afikomens every year, right? The same night that that theft deception is happening, that same night, the first time around, Moses and Aaron and the Jewish people stole Pharaoh's heart. Pharaoh was under the impression, and even specified, as you requested, he was under the impression, and Moses knew this, that they would be back in 3 days. And they had no intention of coming back in 3 days. Why wasn't Moses up front? You with me on the question? Question makes sense? And again, it's not like Pharaoh would have been in position to say, oh, in that case, I don't let you go. It's like, really? You are a firstborn. It's like death, is his son had died. Pharaoh's firstborn son had died. And he knew he was next. So he had all the leverage, by all indications, on the side of the Jews. Moses should have just said, oh, deal's off. We're going. We're not coming back. Just to be up front. It's nice. It's nice to be up front. Transparent. What is going on here? I summarize now 7a and 7b. We skipped a bunch of text here.
And 7a in text 8. They stole the Paschal lamb too. That was another theft.
They
steal the lamb for the Paschal Seder.
Possibly. You're saying where did they get it from?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they eBayed it.
Craigslist.
I don't know. Craigslisted it. I'm trying to think of an animal website. I don't know. Okay. Now. What?
Cows are us.
Cows are, oh, that's
you can use that.
Too soon.
Yeah.
Toys R Us is gone. No,
there's a website where you can actually donate animals. It's a non-profit where you can actually send animals that are used for various purposes to third world countries.
Interesting.
As a mitzvah. Yeah.
Really?
It's called like Heifer International or something.
Right,
like.
They have, because communities thrive on having the milk and the meat and whatever.
Right.
And
so if anyone has an extra goat, you might consider.
We gave a goat once.
Oh, really?
I gave something in honor of, you know, one of my kids or something.
I don't have a goat. I would give a goat if I had a goat because I wouldn't.
They do all the work. You just send them.
Oh! I thought I like have to come up with a goat and then somehow airmail. I'm like, I don't know. How do you wrap up a goat?
I mean, it's so right.
She took a goat. From the vlog.
I was literally thinking that. I was.
You don't have goats in your backyard.
That's part of the thing that I thought I couldn't do this. But now, in retrospect, this is so obvious. It's almost like Pharaoh in retrospect, like, of course they weren't coming back. But he didn't think that. And now we're asking the question, why is Moses stealing Pharaoh's heart. Why the deception? Why the deception? Why the kid's deception? Why Pharaoh's deception? And I have another, the third and final point of deception on the night of Passover. You remember the story of Yaakov and Esav? Jacob and Esau? And remember how they were twins and the older one was Esau and he wasn't really a nice guy, but his father liked him and he wanted to give him the blessings. And he said to his son, prepare me food that I like and I'll give you the blessings. And he's close to his passing, but he wants to bless his sons before he dies and he wants to give his older son the bigger blessing. And his wife hears this and she tells her son, the younger son, Yaakov, to quickly go ahead and prepare the food. Remember this? And the son dresses up in his brother's clothes and he steals the blessings. When did that happen? By now you should know. Night of Passover. Who would have thunk? Remember what he told him to prepare? No. That was when they were younger and Esau was hungry and he said, and he bought the birthright then. But the night that Yitzchak asked his son to bring him food and then he'll give him a blessing and he met the older son, but then the younger son came. Okay, what did he ask?
Did he ask for a lamb?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Why?
It's Passover.
And I know Passover hadn't actually happened chronologically, but the patriarchs kept Torah even before. They knew it before it happened. So they kept the mitzvot and the holidays even before they actually played out. It's kind of mind-bending how that whole thing would have worked. But that's what it says. Take a look at what the Midrash says, text 9. This is powerful stuff. Are we up to you? Stanley, did you just read or we're up to you? It's been a while. Okay, so Dan just read, so it's you. Text 9 on page 2. Yeah, 240, it's you. 240, text 9 from the Midrash. Listen to this.
This is text 9.
Yes, it is. 241. Yeah, sorry.
That night was the first night of Passover.
That night of this blessing fiasco.
Isaac called over his older son Esau and said, my son, tonight the celestial hosts are singing praise to God. The gates of rain are open. Tonight is a blessing for rain. Prepare delicacies for me so I can bless you while I still live.
In other words, like the heavens are open and lots of blessings are pouring forth. I want to hop on this blessing train and give you the blessings on this night. It's Passover, baby. Let's do the brachas. Let's do the blessings. Continue.
Esau went to bring food and got stuck.
That's a very literal translation. He got delayed. It's got stuck. What is it? He got stuck in traffic. It was like, oh my, 285 every time. There are certain cities in which whenever you listen, sorry, I know you're literally in the middle of a text, but I don't mind pausing you for a second. Because, we're close like that. So certain cities, when you listen to traffic, there's always a road that every time, like in New York City, it's always, wait, what is it? It's always the
BQE.
It's always the BQE. The BQE is always, never going to BQE. It's always the BQE. No matter what time, it's 2 a.m., avoid the BQE. There's a situation. It's always the BQE. And in Atlanta, it's always the 285. There's something somewhere in the 285. It's big enough, and it goes all the way. It's somewhere in 285 you need to avoid. Anyway, Esau got stuck somewhere. He was delayed. All right, continue now.
Rebecca said to Jacob, my son, the gates of rain are open tonight. Tonight the celestial hosts are singing praise to God. Prepare delicacies for your father to eat so he can bless you while he still lives.
So she was basically quoting her husband and telling the other brother, hey, do this, it's Passover, let's get these blessings going. Okay, now take a look at the food that he asked to prepare. Marnie, I mentioned this before, but let's read it inside. 10a.
Go now to the flock. And take for me from there two choice kids, and I will make them into tasty foods for your father as he likes.
So this is the mother telling, right? This is Rebecca telling Jacob to prepare the food. But what type of food? Kids. Continue. Why kid goats? Text 10b. One more Rashi says, Marnin.
Did Isaac's menu really consist of two kid goats?
Well, and Rashi doesn't say that's a lot of food, but that's that's the point of his question. That's a lot of kid goats. How can one man who's older and on his deathbed and everything, he's like, what? He's like, I need two full goats. One goat is not going to cover it tonight. It's like, what's going on? Continue.
I need a goat, huh?
Yeah, well, yeah.
The explanation is that he sacrificed one as a paschal offering and the other was for prepares a delicacy.
You see that? So Rashi says, he brought, it was the night of Passover. So one goat was for the carbon, for the offering for God, and the other, they prepared for the family to eat, for him to eat, and for the family to eat. So now it makes sense why he needed two. But now it all comes together. Not it all comes together, but now another indication that this episode happened, this deception of Isaac and also Esau, this deception, that Jacob's deception, happened on the night of Passover. So how many episodes, how many incidences or examples, models of deception do we have on Passover night? We have the kids stealing the Afikoman. We have Moses tricking Pharaoh, deceiving Pharaoh, thinking that the Jews are going to return when they have no intention to return. And then we have Jacob stealing, taking, deceiving his father, his brother, and taking the blessings. One other interesting point of all this, if you recall in the Torah, in the biblical narrative, so what happens is Jacob brings his father the food first, because remember Esau got stuck on the 285, and then Esau comes to his father with the food, and he tells his father, hey, I'm here with the food. And his father says, come eat the food. And what does the father say? He says, who is this? He says, Esau. He says, wait, you just gave me food. He's like, no, I didn't. And he realizes, the father does, he realizes that he gave the blessings to his other son. Take a look at text number 11. You just read, right? Lolly, please read text 11.
And Isaac shuddered a great shudder, and he said, who then is the one who hunted game and brought it to me? And I ate of everything while you had not yet come, and I blessed him. He too shall be blessed. When Esau heard his father's words, he cried out a great and bitter cry, and he said to his father, bless me too, O my father. And he said, your brother came with cunning and took your blessing.
So here's the question. Esau says, I have food for you. And his father says, wait, what food? I already ate. Ah, I gave him the blessing. I'm so sorry, it's already gone. Simple question. If giving the father food is equated with a blessing, he can't eat another few bites of food? Why can't he eat more food? Unbelievable insight. Why couldn't Yitzchak, Isaac, eat food from his from Esau? Why couldn't he eat a second portion of food? What's the big deal? Commentaries say the following. It was the night of Passover. And the tradition is, after you eat the Afikoman, you don't eat other food. Right? Unbelievable, right? It's unbelievable. At the end of the meal, and I mentioned this in the beginning intentionally when we started this class, you go through the order of the Seder, and you eat your matzah, you eat your mar, you eat your sandwich the way we do it. You know, we don't have the meat in it. Back in the day when they had the temple, they had in the offering, they ate meat in the sandwich. Okay, then we have the meal. And at the end of the meal, the last thing you eat is additional matzah, afikoman, which we eat today. The matzah that we eat today is in place of the Paschal lamb. They would eat of that offering as the last. So I need to explain. At our seders today, toward the end of the seder, we have the meal. The last thing we eat is the matzah that the kids stole or that we hid. We eat the piece of the afikoman, and then after that, we don't eat. We drink another few cups of wine, but we don't eat. Back in temple times, they didn't eat a piece of matzah. The afikoman was not a broken piece of matzah. It was the Paschal lamb. We don't have a temple, so we don't offer that offering. But back in the day, they used to end it. Their dessert was the offering with the sacrifice. The roasted, fire-roasted lamb. Or kid goat, whatever it was. They would eat that. That was their dessert. And then that would be the end of the meal. So the commentaries say, what is Isaac saying? He's saying, I ate the food. I ate the one goat for myself and the other goat for the offering. And I can't eat anymore. I can't bless you. I'm out. Come back tomorrow night for the second Seder. No, they only had one Seder back then. It was, you know, whatever. So, it was Israel. So,
why can't you give a blessing after you eat?
You can, but he couldn't eat. The eating, it seems like the eating was triggered. The blessing, I'll ask you another question. Why couldn't Isaac just give his son a blessing? Why was it tied into the whole food thing? Say, bring me food and then I'll give you a blessing. Just give him a blessing. You want to bless your son? Bless your son. Why do you need to eat? I don't have an answer to that, by the way. But it somehow he wanted that hook, that material hook. I need you to do something to attach to the blessing that I want to give you. Like, I need that handle. So his son, the other son, Esav, comes to him and says, I brought you food. Who is this? I can't eat. I already ate. Why can't I eat? Can't eat because it was after the thing. And listen to this. The word, text 12. Text 12. Debbie, please read text 12, 243.
One is not allowed to eat anything after the other.
And here's the mind-bending thing. When Yitzchak, Isaac says, Ba'achicha b'mirma, your brother came with cunning, with trickery, and took your blessing, the word b'mirma, with cunning, with trickery, is the same numerology, numerical value as afikoman. 287. Can't make this stuff up, folks. Bimirma is 287. Bimirma. That Hebrew word bimirma with cunning is 287. What he's saying is your brother came bimirma with the afikoman. And now I can't give you a blessing. Now, because I can't eat the food. So again, huh? No, not page 287. The numerical value of the word bimirma, if you count up the letters, the numerology of it is 287, which is the same numerology as the word, as the Hebrew word afikoman. Now, let's put that aside. So what we're left with is three compelling examples of theft, deception, duplicity, some sort of stealing of mind and stealing of heart that's happening on the night of Passover. And the question is, why? Why is Passover associated with such duplicity, with such like underhandedness seemingly? And why couldn't Moses just tell Pharaoh, we're not coming back? Why could you? It's not happening. We're not coming back. We asked for 3 days. Deal is over. See you later. Don't see you later. Here's the answer. The answer is an unbelievable answer. We're going to make it very short. The point is incredibly profound, but I'm going to keep it very, very simple. Simple, but super deep. Each of us has pharaohs. We all have pharaohs. Pharaohs that shackle us, that keep us stuck, and that keep us from being free. It could be a pharaoh outside of us, a thing, a place, a person, an event that keeps us shackled, keeps us tethered to the status quo and not able to grow or feel like we're not able to grow. It could be an inner pharaoh. It could be fear, anxiety, sadness, depression, whatever it is. It could be an inner pharaoh. But the point is, we each have, every human being has, everyone without exception, has pharaohs, multiple pharaohs that try or that keep us oftentimes tethered and stuck and enslaved. Yeah.
So is that basically the tricking the Yetzer Hara?
So hold on. So what happens, a person wants to take a step out and taste freedom and taste something majestic, something grand, something noble, something meaningful, something... Taste some fresh air, some freedom, some spiritual freedom, personal freedom, and break free of these shackles. What happens? The inner pharaoh says no. No. And then part of the dialogue is, who do you think you are to be free? You don't deserve this. You don't deserve freedom. You don't deserve this nobility or these blessings or this freedom or this new opportunity. You don't deserve it. You're just, you know, this person, so and so. You don't deserve these great things. Who are you? So if you consult with Pharaoh, Pharaoh's not going to let you go. And if you're waiting for Pharaoh to say, oh, the inner pharaohs, the outer pharaohs to say, you know what, change of mind. You're totally free to do whatever you want. No fear, no anxiety, no previous, you know, the brain is like, is we know today that the brain is wired a certain way. And yes, there's neuroplasticity and you can rewire the brain, but that takes a lot of effort. But typically there are certain pathways and synapses and connections, right, that are made in the brain that literally, not compel, but literally lead a person to repeat same patterns of thought and patterns of behavior as was done before. And it's like a repetitive, it could be repetitive negativity or a repetitive being stuck, enslavement. And Pharaoh says, you're not getting out. And we tell ourselves, I'm stuck. And if we wait until all of those pharaohs, inside and out, say, you know what? Do whatever you want. You're free. If we're waiting for that, that's never going to happen. Sometimes we can negotiate a three-day journey. Sometimes we can tell our inner pharaohs, not leaving. Just going to step out for a minute. We'll be right back. Right? You tell your inner fears, I'm not conquering you. I'm taking one step out. You make yourself feel safe in that step out. You with me on this? You make yourself feel safe in your... Oh, wait. Not the oven. You're not doing the oven, are you?
Oh, it's
It was, yeah. Is that okay? Hopefully.
Just working very slow.
Yeah. All right. Sometimes we can tell ourselves, look, we're not, it's almost like a self-negotiation. It's like a self-dialogue or with somebody else, but it's probably most likely going to happen within us where we tell ourselves, look, we're not changing and leaving and departing from who we are and what we've done. No. We're just going to take one step out. I'm not going to become someone who goes regularly to services and to synagogue and does this and that. I'm now shifting the conversation to perhaps a Jewish context, a religious context. I'm not going to become a shul goer. I'm just going to go today to synagogue. That the inner voices might agree to. If you tell the inner voice, oh, total transformation, forever, I'm never seeing you again, I'm going in a new direction, it most likely will fail. Because the inertia, the gravitational pull and the hold of that pharaoh, whatever that is typically too strong to just straight up leave. Cold turkey like that. This is what Moses was teaching us. It wasn't about him and about Pharaoh then and 3,300 years ago. And it wasn't about ancient Egypt. And it wasn't about the night of Passover. It's about it's a timeless concept. And the timeless concept is, if you want to break free of your pharaohs, you need to trick your pharaoh. Tell your pharaoh, I'm not leaving. I'm not leaving. That would be crazy, right? Who does that? Who just leaves pharaoh? Pharaoh, you're the best. I'm just going to take a step out for a few days. But I'll be back. Once you're out, then you can work on taking another step and another step out. But typically, we don't even take the first step because the first step, we tell ourselves, that step means that I'm out, but I feel too stuck to be out. So tell yourself, I'm not breaking free because that's too scary. That's crazy. I'm just perusing. It's like when the shop owner says, can I help you with anything? No, I'm not buying anything. I'm just browsing. We get very like, oh, no, like no commitment. It's like, perfect. Tell your pharaoh, I'm not buying anything. I'm just browsing. And then browse. And then keep on browsing. There's a voice that tells us we don't deserve good things. We don't deserve the best things. Not good things. Good things, the inner voice says yes. But the best things. The blessings that Isaac gave Jacob, that Yitzhak gave Yaakov. Mital ha-shamayim, from the dew of the heavens, u'mishmani ha-aretz, and the fat of the land. That's like the greatest spiritual treasures and physical treasures. We tell ourselves all the time, whether we're aware of it or not, that we're not worthy of such a blessing. Who am I? I'm not a tzaddik. The spiritual blessings, me? Who am I? I'm not a Moses. The greatest wealth? What would I do with it? I'm just a regular guy. We tell ourselves this all the time. And so, Rebecca, Rivka, taught us 3,300 years ago. She told her son Yaakov, and Yaakov said, Jacob, and Yaakov said, who am I to get the blessings? And she said, yeah, it's fine. Just dress up in his clothes and get the blessings. You can use it. You're a nice Jewish boy. You can use some blessings in your life. The message for us is, don't feel unworthy. Don't feel embarrassed. Don't feel held back. When the inner voices tell you, you can't, or you shouldn't, and when the outer voices may say you can't, you shouldn't, just grab whatever you can grab. Take the day, take the 3 days, take the blessing as it presents itself. Don't be afraid to take the opportunity to seize the day. Carpe diem. Seize the day, seize the opportunity. And so, on the night of Passover, we take the blessings. We take the blessings as Yaakov did. On the night of Passover, we tell our Pharaoh, we'll be back in 3 days. And the night of Passover, we teach our children that when you see the bread of freedom, you take it. You take it and run. Thank you for joining me tonight for Torah Studies.